Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Congressman is on the line, Producer Pete. Darren LaHood, thanks for joining us. Welcome back to the show, Darren.
Hey, John. Happy New Year. Good to be on with you and your listeners.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. And you just heard me killing a little time here talking about what happened in Minneapolis. I know we wanted to talk to you about what happened in Venezuela, but let's just start there since that's where I finished. I presume you saw some of that video as well?
I did, and it's a tragedy, I think, all the way around. I don't think the optics look good, but unfortunately, John, I know this as a former state and federal prosecutor, police shootings are common across the country. Now, there will be, as you alluded to, a thorough investigation. There is a special process in place for police shootings. It will be thorough. And if there is criminality that was done here, after all the facts and evidence were reviewed, the local authorities or the local prosecutor there will take action.
You said the optics don't look good. You mean they don't look good for ICE, or they don't look good for the defense of the woman?
Well, when like everybody else, when they watch this on CNN or on social media and you see one clip from somebody's phone, those optics don't necessarily look good. No one likes to see that type of activity happen. Now, again, that's one instance we're seeing. As the country looks at just that, I don't think those optics are good, seeing somebody shot and killed.
You're neither the judge nor the jury, but I've watched it more than I care to, and it seems to me like that shooting was unnecessary. Is that your feeling as well?
I'm not going to jump to conclusions on this, particularly, as I mentioned, there is a protocol and a process in place. It's not my place to make a judgment on that. We have to let the investigation play out appropriately and see what happens.
One last thing, though, about this. I would say, though, that it is your place to at least comment on how this campaign is going in cities like Chicago and Minneapolis. What's your thought about how ICE agents and Border Patrol are patrolling these cities?
Well, I would say a couple things, John. I mean, I think one of the reasons why President Trump got elected a little over a year ago was to fix our broken immigration system, the unmitigated disaster at our southern border. People were fed up with immigration, and that was Republicans, Democrats, Independents. How far you go in doing that, I think, has its limits in how you do that. You know, fixing the southern border crossings that were illegal, I think that's a good thing. Sending criminals back to their country of origin that are here illegally is a good thing. I think it's another question to figure out how far ICE goes to enforce the rule of law. What makes it difficult, John, is when you have cities like Minneapolis or Chicago or others that are sanctuary cities that don't enforce the rule of law, then it becomes more difficult to do that. But I think there has to be an appropriate balance between what federal officials are doing and trying to work with locals.
Seems to me like there's got to be a better way. I mean, I can't help but watch the videos on social media or on news networks, and it just seems so chaotic. They have dispatched 1,500 to 2,000 agents in Minneapolis, and that's probably just a reaction to the Somali story, but whatever the reason for them there, really? 2,000 agents with machine guns, scrumming around the streets of Minneapolis? Doesn't that seem ill-advised to you? Or would you at least comment on how well they seem to be doing that job?
You alluded to this. I think there's a direct correlation to the allegation that $9 billion in taxpayer money was fraudulently misappropriated, stolen, however you want to categorize that. And there is a significant Somali population there, some that are illegal, some that are legal. And there has to be an appropriate response on that. I go back to what I said before. I think there has to be an appropriate balance between the role of the federal government and what happens locally there. But obviously, we have an obligation and responsibility to make sure taxpayer money is spent wisely. And when you see the, you know, the allegations, and you saw this week, the governor decided not to run again for a third term, specifically because of this Somali fraud investigation of over $9 billion that we know of now.
And I'm trying to figure out what that has to do with shooting a woman in broad daylight on the street in Minneapolis.
Well, I don't know that we have an answer to that, but to your earlier question on why there are ICE agents there, I think there's a direct correlation to what's occurred with the fraud with the Somalis there.
What's your read on this story in Venezuela? Congress was briefed by the Secretary of State. Were you at that briefing, and what can you tell us?
I was, John, and I also serve on our House Intelligence Committee, and so I've been involved with a number of briefings that preceded what occurred over the weekend, and then obviously since then. The first observation that I would make, John, is I thought it was a flawless execution by our special forces, our Delta Force, our SEALs, amazing what they were able to do. The second thing is, in regards to Maduro, I mean, Maduro is a thug. He is a dictator. He is an international criminal. Remember, he was indicted back in 2018, superseded indictment in 2020, both under the Biden administration and the Trump administration. The Biden administration upped his bounty to $25 million. It then went up to $50 million. So he's been a wanted fugitive. So taking him out of Venezuela on this indictment as a fugitive from law, I think was the right thing to do. I think as you've seen in Venezuela since then, while it is chaotic a little bit, you know, Maduro asked all these people to go protest. No one is protesting there, him leaving. Now, I do have concerns about the United States running the country. It's a third world country and maybe arguably a second world country. Obviously, they have a lot of oil wealth there, but I think we got to be careful about running a particular country. And the briefing that we had yesterday, it was thorough. It was concise. It was evidence-based. It went on way, way longer than people thought. Huh. But it included the CIA director, General Kane, who did the operation as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, and also Marco Rubio.
I think a lot of people would agree with you that the world is a better place now that Maduro is no longer running that country, although the vice president there does not seem to be that far from him, but maybe she's more practical about things or tractable. But I think what concerns people is not the result, but it was the means by which we did it. It doesn't seem to you. Are you concerned that it violates international law and that the Constitution says the treaties are the supreme law of the land and the president's job is to uphold the Constitution? Are you worried about the legality of the way we did it?
Well, I'm not from the standpoint of, remember, Maduro is an illegitimate dictator. He wasn't properly elected down there. Second thing is, if you read the indictments, again, done under the Biden administration and the Trump administration, when Maduro was taken out of his compound, he was immediately Mirandized. He was given his superseding indictment. Mm-hmm. He was given a lawyer when he landed there. I mean, he's going to have to account for this. You know, there's been a number of analogies made to the Noriega event that occurred, you know, some 30 years ago. And I think some of that is applicable to what occurred here. He's going to have his time in court to defend whatever he went through.
Yeah.
But I think basing this on an indictment and a fugitive from law. And then the last point that I would make from a national security standpoint, make no mistake about it, John. Iran, China, and Russia have used Venezuela as a platform and a base to spy and threaten and potentially harm the United States. And that doesn't even get to the narco-terrorism.
Did they say that? Did they say that in the briefing? Because I do understand how critical the relationship might be with, say, China and Venezuela. Was that really the end game here? It wasn't about democracy. It wasn't about nation building. It might not even been so much about oil as it was China. Did the Secretary of State say that?
I think it's a combination of things. It was a classified briefing, so I'm not going to get into what he said there, John. But the points I was making, I think it's a combination of things. I mean, to have in the Western Hemisphere our worst adversaries, Iran, China, and Russia, that is clear. And if you look at the president's national security summary that he put out last year, I mean, they continue to threaten the Western Hemisphere. China's inroads in Venezuela are significant. And so we can't afford to have our adversaries in our backyard doing what they're doing. I think that had a lot to do with it. I think the oil had much to do with it, and also the narco-terrorism that Maduro was engaged with.
Congressman, it's so ironic, though, that the biggest narco-terrorist we ever captured, we just released. I mean, I just can't square those two things. But did they talk about how long we're going to run the country and what that will look like. The president said yesterday that when asked, will it be 3 months, 6 months? He said it'll be longer than that. It'll be a very long time. What clues did you get about that?
Well, I think there's a couple things. This is a very fluid situation. Let's all admit that. And I think Congress will play a role in weighing in. We only have so much, I think, appetite for whether you want to call it regime building or running things. And so I think we're going to allow Secretary Rubio and his team to work with the team on the ground there. As you've seen, the vice president, who's now technically the president sworn in, she's changed her opinion. Initially, she's very supportive of Maduro, was speaking out against his arrest. That's changed within the last 48 hours here. She now wants to work with U.S. I think the other thing that's very important here, the only money that they relied upon was the illegal oil sales. Now that we are going to refine that and be able to sell it on the open market, yeah, and give them money, that's going to be a big part of that, is the financial aspect here.
Do you know to what degree the U.S. oil companies are on board, like they're willing to invest their billions, as the president said? How much consultation have we done with them, if that's the plan?
Well, the Secretary of Energy has been in close consultation with a number of our companies that, remember, John, they also, for a long time pre-Chavez, which was the dictator before Maduro, They had oil leases there. They had contracts there. They worked with Venezuela. I mean, Venezuela pre-Chavez, pre-socialism, was one of the wealthiest countries in the Western Hemisphere, if not the wealthiest, had a very educated system there. So, again, if you look at Panama today, 30 years later after Noriega, it is a functioning second world, first world country. They are a great ally of the United States. They are a partner from a military and intelligence standpoint. We're a long ways from that now, but I think there's a precedent where we can help with that transition. We're not going to have troops on the ground there, but I think the economics of the oil will help with the transition that the country needs to go through.
We're not going to have troops on the ground there. Is that a promise? Is that you're certain of that?
I am one member of Congress. That's not something I'm supportive of, and I think I share that same sentiment with many of my colleagues.
Okay. One of your colleagues, Mike Quigley, was on with us just a couple of days ago, and in passing I said, are you going to run for mayor of Chicago? And he said, yes. You're not hiding any announcements from us yourself. Governor, you're going to run. You're not going to run. You're still in for the 16th district congressman?
I'm happy in the district that I have been in, and I look forward to running for re-election in November. The time for filing for, of course, governor and Senate, that's passed now. But I look forward to doing everything I can to get re-elected in the 16th district, and proud to represent the 740,000 constituents that I have in my district.
Darren, I always appreciate you coming on. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, John. Have a good day. Go Bears.
Yeah, we'll take all the good juju we can get. That's Congressman Darren LaHood from the 16th.